calling. How are you?
Hey, Sam. I'm doing well. Thanks.
So tell me what you do at Focus on the Family. Now you're basically working on boundless.org, right?
I have the helm of our young adults ministry, which Boundless is kind of one of our main vehicles at this point.
Of what we're doing and just some of the things that we've found over the years, which seems not that problems are getting worse. It just seems there's more singles than there ever have been. You know, along with your basic needs like your food, your clothing, et cetera, search for a mate like a biological imperative. And while I think it's been overemphasized, at least in my experience growing up, very conservative Christian denomination, that, you know, it was a blessing to be called to a life of singleness, as Paul was. He talks about that, et cetera. But the reality is that's not for everybody. In fact, in my experience, it's for very few people that feel like they're called into a life of singleness. Whereas the men and women that I know, because I'm in my 40s now, that are the same age or older than me, the ones that are single, 95% of the ones that I know are not single because that was what they chose. And
right.
So because we're in the thick of it, it's something we experience. And so when I was doing some research on this, just to keep up to speed, I had no idea that the actual numbers was over 100 million Americans that are adults that are
yeah.
presently single. And to me, there's only 300 million people in the U.S. That's one in three.
Sure. Yeah.
And then what was shocking was that out of those, they're saying, according to these stats in 08, 40 million or 40% of those are divorced. And I know from our membership, about half of them are divorced. And one in four of all of our members are single parents. And then I didn't realize this, that one in four, according to this stat, 27% actually of all adult Americans live alone. And so I thought, so we've got these multiple things. So it's not just us seeing it. It's sort of trending across, whether it's secular or like whether it's just affects the Christian world or it affects everybody in the States. So you've got this high rate of adult singleness. You've got a high rate of divorce. And then you've got a high rate of singles living alone. And in our view, humans were made for fellowship. And I don't think, people live alone for a variety of reasons. But I think a lot of it is just because they're single. And,
right.
you know, you get to a point you don't necessarily want roommates. And so, but I don't think that's necessarily ideal. So from our experience, it seems like Christians tend to mirror roughly the trend demographically, at least, as secular society, whether that's, you know, good or bad in terms of divorce and stuff. So that led into our first question, which was, for you, in your opinion, what would you think might be the contributing factors to explain why we've got such a high rate of adult singles today?
I would say the biggest factor, and I'll kind of distinguish first the church, because I think this is specific to the church, is that largely we don't have a biblical understanding of marriage and or dating. So, which is unfortunate, because I think you would assume that that would be encompassed, you know, within a worldview kind of understanding of the Bible. But the fact is the Bible begins with marriage and it ends with marriage. And somehow in the middle there, our culture and the culture within the church has, as you even said, picked up the dating and the marriage practices of the world. So I'm totally in agreement with you that everyone, with the exception of a few who are called to a lifetime of celibate service, that means that the default is marriage for most people, and most people are ultimately called to marriage. So why can't we get there? That's a huge question. I think there are some cultural factors that play into it as well. Myself being in Generation X and now the millennials who are coming up behind me, we are the product of the largest divorce generation in the history, those who grew up now in the 80s and 90s. Largest divorce population. Obviously, feminism has played a lot into that. Roe v. Wade has played into that. Those who were born after, you know, the early 70s, really that idea of what is life, you know, maybe it's cut out on a certain number of potential, you know, people out there within our generation, but also just the devaluing of life in general. And then the presence of fatherlessness in the home, that whole aspect I think has contributed to kind of a generation of young men who are at sea when it comes to what does it look like to biblically lead in a relationship or even biblically enter a relationship and ultimately get to marriage. So they're just not seeing good models. So I think that, in addition to the fact that the church hasn't kind of taken up the standard, the church hasn't said, you know, if we really believe that marriage is for most, how are we going to get them there? We have a huge, you know, dearth of mentors within the church, within the Christian community, and that is kind of leaving young adults to flounder on their own, and it's not getting us anywhere good, whether it's in relationships or whether it's in career or worldview, our own faith and understanding of the culture. We're kind of left to stumble along on our own, and I think that's a huge problem.
Wow, that's a pretty encompassing answer. So, okay, so given that reality, how, where and how are Christian singles connecting? Given that, I mean, once you get to your post-college years and you're, you know, in a job, you're in an office environment, besides those in your office, besides those in your local church, how are Christians connecting in today's world?
Yeah. I mean, I would say obviously the largest pool is still within the church. And I mean, I honestly believe that it's the role of the local church to help, to assist in making good matches and moving people towards marriage in a way that's biblical and intentional. So I think a lot of Christian singles especially still do see church as kind of that, okay, is this where I'm going to find my mate? The problem is that that's not done in a holistic manner. It's not done in the spirit of mentorship and accountability. So that's why you have the whole dynamic of the meat market, which everyone just thinks is ridiculous and no one likes it, but everyone still kind of participates in it. So there's kind of that aspect, I think. I think the online component is huge, and it definitely within the last, 15, 20 years has really ramped up, to the point where, we're seeing a lot of folks choose to go online, for that reason. So I think that's big. I think there's a huge movement now towards finding people within aspects of ministry. So as you are serving, whether that's within your church, whether that's at a local soup kitchen, whether that's on the mission field or in a specific short-term missions trip, a lot of people go there and they say, you know what, if this is what I'm passionate about, then maybe if I participate in this, someone else who's passionate about this will be there as well and we'll make a connection. So I think there's still a lot of the social avenues and a lot of what's going on, but it's kind of, that only takes you so far. Eventually, you have to actually relate to these people and
Sure.
hopefully, find a way to be intentional in seeing if there's any potential there for a marriage mate.
You're at 1 in 6 are meeting online. But what are your thoughts about this? And do you think it's here to stay as a way for people specifically to meet other singles?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a viable option. I mean, I've myself have done it. I think that it's a great opportunity. And I mean, I don't mean to say this in a way to make it crass or anything, but it's a great way to quote unquote get your numbers up. I mean, it's a great way to meet people. And I think the benefit of the whole online dynamic is that everyone goes in there with the assumption that everyone else is there for the same reason. So you don't have to do this awkward, well, I'm not really interested in a relationship right now. I just want to be friends. I'm maybe not, I'm recovering from XYZ. Everyone that's on an online dating site is pretty much there because they want to find, someone, hopefully in the Christian context, ultimately to move toward marriage with. So, I think it cuts a lot of the clutter as far as, who's in it for what and what, eliminates the players, so to speak, all that kind of stuff. So I think that's very helpful in that sense. And I know many of my friends have met their spouses online, and I think that's fantastic. I just think it's that, what ultimately is the benefit of the whole online dynamic? I think it is for meeting someone. And eventually, you have to take that relationship into real time and real space. And the online sites probably that ultimately will be the most successful are the ones that can help folks do that well and, put some reality to that relationship so that it doesn't become this indefinite pen pal situation that I think no one would want. So, kind of moving in that trajectory, if it can move them along into making some healthy matches, meeting people, and then ultimately saying, hey, okay, what do we have here and how can we move it beyond this? I think that's where the real value is.
I know personally when I got involved in this business in the first place based on a personal search because I was to a new city which has about 4 million people. It's huge. In many ways, it's very unfriendly. It's very hard to meet Christians. We're not a total pagan culture. We do have lots of churches, but I just found as an outgoing person, it was difficult. And then when I stumbled onto these new websites popping up in the late 90s, I met women both locally and all over the US. And as it turned out, I ended up meeting somebody who introduced me to somebody, came to work for me. Long story short, we've been married 7 years. So 4 kids later, et cetera. So it's really worked. Concerning equally yoked, do you think that today's generation are aware as to how, like beyond paying lip service, of course you shouldn't be equally yoked. I mean, we grew up knowing that, but do you think people are aware just how fundamentally important it is to have a believer for a spouse, like this generation of Christian singles?
Yeah. I think they understand that. Most self-described evangelicals, I think, understand that. I think where we run into trouble is when it when you get a specific person into play. So, for example, this is why we're so hardcore, again, about accountability and mentorship at Boundless, is because I have known friends, for example, who have been on different sites, and they have met someone, and then within, 2-3 weeks, they are in a quote-unquote online relationship with this person and have basically given up way too much emotionally, to the point where all of a sudden certain things start becoming negotiable that shouldn't be negotiable. And so it's kind of that definition of, okay, what does equally yoked actually mean then? Because for many of them, I think they realize, well, they'll say, well, if the person proclaims Christ, or the person, says they're an adherent of XYZ, whether it's some theological standard or doctrinal standard, the fact is, many of them, you will see much room for, differing opinions or different levels of faith or conviction in that sense. And I think it can, the ground can get kind of muddy in that sense. So I think whether that's in person or online, there's always that danger of, really, what is it that I believe? And is this important enough to recognize that, yeah, this is going to play into a marriage at some point, and I need to make sure that on these fundamentals, we do agree, so it's not just this lip service to Christianity in a sense. Sure. So I think most do understand it, but I think that, far too many Christian young adults, and this really, is disappointing, I think, statistically, will let others define their faith, and they'll say, well, okay, that's okay, rather than adhering to what really is scripturally and biblically true.
Now, are you referring to two believers who are fooling around? If I can be blunt, or do you mean, well, he says he's a Christian, but he doesn't really go to church?
I would say there could be kind of both and. I mean, it could be something that plays out in specific, issues of morality or whatever, but it could also be, a woman, we hear a lot about this on Boundless, is women who are really on fire for the Lord. They're the ones who are plugged into Bible studies. They're the ones who have high, high accountability relationships. They want to be married, so they are willing to hitch their wagon to a guy who maybe comes from a Christian home but hasn't done really that hard faith work himself. And so that is almost a, I don't know if we could say that that's unequally yoked, if you're saying, is this guy saved or isn't he, but almost a spiritually imbalanced relationship. Where ultimately, she's kind of willing to compromise on a few things. And now we always say, there may be guys there who maybe, someone's a newer believer or whatever, and that's fine. But is he on a trajectory that is moving toward maturity in Christ? And is he actually actively pursuing that? Is he in God's word? Is he, what are those things that really are important, rather than the whole, well, I'm an American, so I'm a Christian kind of kind of idea. And I think a lot of women especially will settle for that.
So I used to go to this group. It was called Careers and Professionals, or CAPS for short, and really almost everybody there was single. There was about 100 people. And I remember thinking, from a matchmaking point of view, I could see 50 couples, but hardly any of them were dating. And it was almost like they had this standard, perhaps set by Hollywood from the guy's perspective, from a physical point of view, or the women with this romantic sense of what their mate should be. And I don't know if it was unrealistic. I think it was more the women were like, look, we're ready to settle down because we want to, get married, have kids, all the rest of it. And these guys, they just seem to be taking their time, like they don't have any sense of urgency. So I had one friend of mine say, do you know what happens to a guy when he turns 30? And I said, I don't know, he starts maturing? And she said, no, he gets comfortable. I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, by then he's out of college. He's probably got a job. He's working on a career. He's got a car. He's making house payments. He's starting to put down roots. And the sex part, he can kind of live without that in a way, because he's done it his whole life if he's a believer. And so he's not in a rush. And she goes, and I'm 32 and I want to get married and I want kids and all the rest of it. And this particular friend is now in her 40s and is still single, and was ended up dating a lot of what I would call pagans, meaning nice people, but just not believers. They might be Canadian in this case, or American, but they're just nice people, and they sounded wonderful. But really, I said, but would you rather be in a marriage where you're lonely, or would you rather be single and not fulfilled per se, but be following the Lord? And basically, she decided to be single, even though she'd still like to be married. But the time for kids has passed for her, unfortunately. Again, because a lot of these guys that are in their 30s, I don't know how many of them have since gotten married. but some of them still are single, and it's like they're playboys, and one day they'll be 48 or 50 and wake up and go, oh, I need to get married now. Well, I mean, who wants to date, I can say this as a guy, who wants to date a guy who's 50 and is single, never married, because he just thought was too lazy to get around to it?
Right. That's actually quite a huge theological discussion, because it really comes down to, you know, to trust. And is a woman who is a self-described believer really willing to match her theology to her reality and say, I am willing at all costs to trust that God's story is bigger than where I am right now, and I am going to have to hold out for what I know is his standard? And not that it's some crazy, like, you know, megalomaniac list or anything, but those essentials of biblical, you know, biblical conviction. Is she willing to do that? And, you know, that's where I really think that the church isn't teaching that, and it's unfortunate.
Every journey starts with one step, right, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem to me that people who say, look, I am trusting in the Lord, I'm waiting, you know, I'm waiting for the right guy or girl to come along, and I'm, you know, I'm trying to get my life in order, like I'm emotionally mature, I'm this, I'm that, and I just doesn't seem to be happening. And it seems like across America, and I would argue Canada as well, you have this whole segment of people moving through life that are single, but not by choice. Now, the divorce thing's a different issue. It's more of the same, but that's a case of people who were married and either the wrong person or somebody had a character flaw or whatever. But the reality for those who are single, never married, is many of them, just like Christ talks about, some were just never asked. You know, some are single because they're born that way, some were made that way by men, some were never asked, et cetera. And it just seems to me, is this a function of what you talked about in the beginning, where we just live in a society that has really lost its way? And one of the unfortunate negative is that you've got a whole segment moving through life that are single, or is it possibly because a lot of these people are, I don't know, wrong place, wrong time? I mean, it seems like they have the desire to be married, but yet the Lord's not answering the prayer, and you've got half the population moving through life not being married.
Yeah.
And it just seems very, I don't know what the word
is.
Very sad.
I think it is. Yeah, it is. And I think it's both, actually. I mean, I think, again, it comes back to that biblical understanding of marriage. And this is another message that Boundless is known for, and we're very uncompromising on, and that is that there are very distinct roles when it comes to pursuing marriage. And men are called to pursue marriage, and to, you know, Proverbs 18:22, he who finds a wife finds what is good and finds favor with the Lord, not he who sits in his parents' basement and plays Xbox all day.
Sure.
But we're seeing that's where where a lot of the guys are landing. So it's very you know, it's this attitude of, well, you know, I definitely want to be married, so if it happens, well, that's great. I mean, it's this whole, men in particular shouldn't be sitting around waiting for marriage to happen to them. If they're not called to singleness, they should be out pursuing a godly wife. Now, we often say here on Boundless that, you know, it takes risk, and men trust God by risking, whereas women have to trust God by waiting. And they're both very difficult things to do, and they're very difficult even for those individual sexes, because for me, it's a lot easier for me to risk than to wait. And so I have to really be challenged. I mean, just by nature, my personality is more of a maverick, a risk taker. So,
sure.
But my God-given responsibility is to wait and to respond. But we're finding that a lot of the men aren't moving in that direction of saying, you know what, I believe I'm called to marriage, so what does this look like for me? How am I going to get it done? And they put too much emphasis on, well, you know, if the Lord's just going to shine a spotlight on someone, or I'll know if she's quote-unquote the one, and all this stuff that is just patently unbiblical. And then women are out there trying to make something happen when that's not helpful either. And so as a result, we kind of end up in this weird dysfunctional vortex where no one's getting married because no one's really doing it in a way that's healthy and biblical.
So if I could summarize, would you say that a lot of it is self-inflicted, at least from the men's point of view?
Yeah, I would say that for sure.
Yeah.
There's no way specifically in the church that they're being unilaterally challenged, I would say,
yeah,
other than scripture itself, if they're in scripture. You know, it's they're just not being told that this is really a mark of biblical maturity and a mark of biblical manhood. It's not, you know, we're trying here at Boundless to move young adults along those markers of maturity as they're reflected in relationships or in involvement with the church or in career. I mean, there are a lot of different things that young adults have to hit in order to say, you know, I have now moved beyond, you know, adolescence. But they're delaying that longer and longer, and it's just kind of perpetuating what now, you know, researchers refer to as that adult essence, which sure. is, again, just patently unbiblical.
Right, right. Or people living at home long past the age when they should have been kicked out of the nest and had responsibility.
Exactly.
I know it's more of an ethnic thing. Like, my wife's Brazilian, and mm-hmm. so it's very similar to Italian or Greek or Spanish, et cetera, large families, and you generally don't leave, particularly the women, don't leave home until they get married. And then you have the men who are just fat and lazy because the mothers are feeding them spaghetti all day mm-hmm. and doing everything for them that they basically are looking for a mother. But why would they, like, in the form of a wife, but that's not what they should be looking for. But why would they get off their rear end, so to speak, and go out and look when they've got mama taking care of them, who's quite
right.
happy to have them home at 35?
Right.
You know,
yeah, so there's really no reason that a Christian man should be sitting around saying, well, I guess I'm just not married because it just hasn't happened. I mean, that's not... There's no way. I mean, even biblically, when you look at it, you know, men were out, they were going to wells, they were getting their, you know, their
sure.
relatives to find wives for them and stuff. It's just nowhere in scripture does it say, you know, God's going to pick someone out for you and just show you who it is. There's an
sure.
active, and you don't sit in your house and say, I really need a job, so I hope someone knocks on my door and offers me one. You go out and you interview and you send out applications, and, you know, it's
sure.
the same principle.
But you could argue that the segment that are aware that they need to find a mate, we're seeing it because, and you're presumably seeing it on your website because they're actively doing something about it. They're not sitting at home eating spaghetti from their mother. They're not sitting playing Xbox. They're actually online on my site and others. So in that sense, there are a group, men and women, who are out looking. Sort of moving on here to that, it's sad for us particularly, but from a business point of view, the secular world realizes there's money involved in this, and they are actively targeting Christian singles, just like they're targeting singles of other stripes, whether secular or Jewish or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, many of these sites are, in my view, have hidden agendas because they're also into promoting things like pornography or homosexuality, you know, through homosexual matchings. We were shocked to find Penthouse has a Christian dating site.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you were aware of that, but they've got a dating
yeah.
site. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, they bought a big company that was primarily focused on the adult market. It had a bunch of niche sites. So you now have the
yep.
situation where Newsweek even was almost in shock a couple of years ago. They did a story on them, and it was called Born Again or Porn Again. And they
mm-hmm.
basically asked the new CEO, like, how do you reconcile that? And his response was, well, they're different entities from a business point of view. And then he said, secondly, a lot of our porn sold into the biblical, like the Bible Belt. Well, to me, that's totally irrelevant. The fact
mm-hmm.
is, if you happen to subscribe to their newsletter from their single service, they have links at the bottom to their gay sites. And
oh,
so,
yeah. mm-hmm.
you know, which is kind of sad. And then you've got other companies that just seems like it's just a business decision. They're targeting this market just like that market. But they also,
mm-hmm.
it's only one click away from stuff that is clearly not godly. And I don't just mean homosexual liaisons. I mean things like one night stands or
right.
the way the world views it. And so if Christians... singles are online, and they're some of these sites hide who they are and other ones don't, but
mm-hmm.
either way, if you're subscribing to these, you're unwittingly helping in a way to fund these other activities.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you're responsible per se, but if you found out that you actually were subscribing to a service that is primarily focused on porn, I would think you'd be shocked. And so our take on it is that since Christian singles are online anyway, that this sometimes we get some conservative members saying, my pastor says it's not biblical for me to be online looking for a mate, so I have to leave your service. And of course, we're sad to see them go. But our take is that Christians are online anyway. They're using Twitter and they're using Facebook and MySpace. They're using their iPads and pods and all this stuff. They're on dating services. So wouldn't it make sense to have Christians matching Christians as opposed to letting the world do it? Not just from a business perspective, but because so many of them tend to be into these questionable activities.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question sort of sum up is, what would you think is the best way to reach, you know, the Christian singles that are following your movement? Like, so your Christian singles, not just at Boundless, but I mean, if the stats are right, half of your listening audience is single. And
Mm-hmm.
they're on all these different sites. So wouldn't it, what is the best way beside, I mean, you've gone into great detail about how we need to educate them, they need to become more mature, et cetera. How do you reach Christian singles, even from a ministry funding point of view, if we're not focusing on the family, meaning families are not being even created in the first place, and it's not due to abortion, it's due to Christians simply not getting married. Well, that means that you've got a whole generation that doesn't happen. It's like us losing a potential customer because we're down. We have a technical issue, say, which fortunately doesn't happen very often. Well, that person never comes to the website. Then they never pay. Then they never renew. So we don't just lose the downtime. We lose that future revenue stream. So in the same way, if you've got less Christians running around, you've got less economic activity, and then you've ultimately got less people contributing to ministries like Focus on the Family.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it is, you know, obviously Christian singles are desperately looking for community, and ultimately, you know, that's why community is so well reflected in marriage, in addition to being a perfect reflection of Christ in the church. I mean, I think that there is a, you know, there's a lot of places Christian singles will go, you know, to try to find that community, and Boundless is a good example of that. I think Christian Cafe would be a good example of that. And so that's why it's great to have those avenues out there. I think, you know, probably, I think, you know, this is kind of what I was talking about first, that the number one thing is changing the worldview on marriage and an understanding of why marriage is important and why it is really for most people. And then ultimately what that looks like when you put that into a time frame. So, you know, again, you want to, I'm sure you want folks on your site ultimately making good matches. You don't want them on there just indefinitely for 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, sifting through profiles and never ultimately getting anywhere. And that's kind of, you know, here at Boundless, that's kind of what we're saying, is we're like, okay, we don't want you in our demographic forever. So ultimately, just that's why the church as a community needs to rally around young adults and specifically singles and say, it is our responsibility as believers to help you get there, to help you get to marriage. And it's not, you know, that's why I think the real communal aspect, even if you're doing it in an online dating scenario, you know, get away from online dating where, you know, a guy or a girl is just sitting in their house, you know, going through profiles, but really sure. Do it in a more community-based mindset of really bringing those mentors in to speak into their lives and kind of help them get it done.
And then our final thing is around the issues of financing. We think that I know from running a small business, these things aren't cheap to run. And those that are in ministry, like I'm attending a startup church near where I live, and I know from you know, doing a small business, whether it's for profit or not, running a business is expensive. And I think a lot of Christians don't realize just how expensive it is. It's not just salaries. You got to pay for the lights, you got the electricity, the building, all of the support stuff that nobody ever sees. Someone actually has to pay for all this stuff. And prayers, I think, are terrific, but you need action to go along with that from God's people. And so, one of the things that we're asking is, how can Christian companies actively support pro-family organizations like Focus on the Family financially, along with our prayers?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a lot there. You know, I think Focus on the Family obviously is, you know, it's interesting because we're having been around more than 30 years now. I think we're kind of considered in some ways the premier Christian, you know, organization for family advice and help and all that. But our challenge which is interestingly tied into Boundless, is in now introducing a whole new generation of young families to what Focus has to offer. So we'll have many of our folks say, you know, oh my goodness, I just, you know, Focus is so great. My mom loves you guys. So we're kind of like, okay, but we kind of need to be your ministry too, because you're now, you know, 27 and have a small child. So, so I think, you know, in a way that other companies can, it's a good measure of just saying, I mean, other than outright giving, of course, is through referrals. I mean, and we do get a lot of that. We get a lot of folks who say, well, you know, here's through partnerships, you know, in that sense as well, saying here, we see Focus on the Family as being the best go-to folks for this, as far as what this looks like. Focus on the Family is doing XYZ, recognizing, you know, fiscal responsibility in that. And I think, you know, we've had a lot of, in fact, we have a couple, groups that, or organizations or companies or whatever that have, specifically directed even employees to focus for certain things. So, I think, I don't know, I maybe have to think about that some more as far as some potential there just from companies in general, because I think, any time that a company, especially one that's well-established and does well, lends credibility to what we're doing, and there's a lot of, obviously in the press, we're kind of ramping up with some of that too, especially with our orphan care initiative. Here we are challenging churches across the country and even beyond now at this point to take in the orphans that are available through our foster care system, and just saying, we are the church, we're charged with caring for orphans and widows. In Colorado alone, we have just around 800 waiting orphans and over 3,500 churches. And we said, do the math, we can get this done. And we began a challenge that now we have just over 300 kids left waiting for homes. And we believe we'll be in the process of driving that down to a virtual zero. So we're super passionate about that. And that's something that no one can argue with us on, because we're not talking, sure. I mean, we're obviously talking our theology and we know that it's a biblical mandate, but no one can point a finger at Focus and say, we hate you because you're putting kids in homes. So.
Sure. Sure.
So
are these American kids?
Yes.
Did you say orphans? These are not orphans from Sudan or somewhere. These are American kids.
Right.
Whose parents
are American kids. Exactly. And in most cases, what's really unique about this program is these are the kids that are considered unadoptable. So the ones that are languishing in foster care, where it's a process of they are maybe older or they're part of sibling groups, and quote unquote, no one wants to take them because everyone's just waiting for babies. And so we're saying, we're going to Christian couples and Christian families and saying, do this not as something that you need to do for yourself because you want a kid or you want whatever the motivation is, but do it because you're called to take in. You really feel a calling on your life to take in these kids. And we're finding that, in fact, we just had an event here in Colorado last weekend, and we had another 55 families step forward and say, we're going to begin the process of adoption for these kids in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And what's really unique about it is that for the first time in history, we have actually had state agencies open up their books to us. So DHS in Colorado, for the first time, they've ever partnered not only with a nonprofit, but a Christian nonprofit to make that happen. But they're seeing that we can get the job done. And so they're willing to do it. And now we've gone beyond Colorado to California, to Missouri, to Ohio, Florida, a number of different states we're doing the same thing in. So it's pretty awesome.
Wow. So thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today.